A billion years ago, there was nothing but space. Then one of God's wet farts blew all the planets in place. There were no signs of life on Mars or Venus, but planet Earth was blessed with two baby geniuses. Baby geniuses, we know everything. Baby geniuses, we know everything. Baby geniuses, we know everything. Baby geniuses, tell us something we don't know.
Hello, babies. I came into that one weird.
Hello, babies.
Hello, babies.
Hello, babies. God, I'm so sorry.
We hope you like the pod. Welcome to Baby Geniuses. I'm Emily.
I'm Lisa.
Welcome to the show.
Happy Thanksgiving week.
Happy Thanksgiving week.
It's not too late to cancel.
It's not too late to cancel. Yeah, welcome to the show. Yeah, I've spent probably the good last week just having my brain twisted like a wet mop about people's Thanksgiving plans.
Yeah.
It's tricky. Okay. For some context, if people haven't, because I think people have been fatigued about reading about COVID. And so I think that there are genuinely people who maybe don't understand that we are entering the worst phase of the pandemic that we've seen yet. It's worse than any other time.
It's the baddest now.
It's the worst now that it has ever been, and it's worse than it has ever been. So it's not just like, oh, we've tied our record for worst part of the pandemic. It's like we're entering a phase that is very, very, very bad.
Isn't it something like a quarter of all of COVID infections have happened just in the month of November in the U.S.? Something like that.
It's getting to a
place where it's like, I'm scared of getting any other sickness or breaking a bone because the hospitals will just be like too full to deal with anything.
Yeah.
But I mean,
so that's the other thing too, is it's like, yeah, that's another concern. And it's also something where it's like, even if you think that there's no chance you have COVID and there's no chance your family has COVID, if you're driving to go see them, you are still putting yourself and other people at unnecessary risk, because if you get in a car accident or anything like that on the way, the hospitals, you're going to be such a strain on the hospitals and you could get exposed that way. And it's just,
it's all bad. It's all terrifying. And it's disproportionately affecting poor people and people of color, of course. And it's ass.
So we're at this point right now, I think, where I don't know about you, Lisa, but for me personally, I'm really struggling with how to express my concern in a way that's effective, because I know that a lot of people are not responding to like anything that feels like shaming about what how they're responding to the pandemic or how they're making their choices. And I'm sure that there are people who are like truly don't have good choices, who are just like, who have to see their family for some reason or another, like who cannot change their plans. I'm sure that there are people for whom it's not as simple as like, I can just stay home and it'll be okay.
Yeah.
But there are also people who are making choices that are reckless.
There's only so much you can do. I really liked that graphic you posted on your Instagram about the sort of Swiss cheese analogy.
The Swiss cheese model.
Where every slice of Swiss cheese has holes in it, but is adding another layer of protection. And it's both, there's a whole section that's like individual actions, and then there's a section that's like, you know, how do you say it? Structural, like governmental support.
The idea is that like, there are a bunch of different layers of protection that we have against the virus. Some of them are our individual choices, and some of them are like collective measures that are taken by the government or by communities in order to protect us. And some of those things are like free testing or like, you know, enforced mask rules or things like that. And then the individual choices are like keeping your distance, like using good hygiene, like staying home when possible. And every single one of those things, you should think of as a slice of Swiss cheese.
It's not perfect. It's permeable.
It's not perfect. It's permeable. The more you stack, the less likely it is that the holes in the slices of Swiss cheese are going to line up and let some of the virus through.
To understand this, you have to know that each slice of Swiss cheese has holes in different places.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with Swiss cheese, but the holes, like they don't, it's not a tunnel. Yeah. It's not.
They don't just like drill holes in blocks of cheese to make a Swiss cheese that goes straight through it.
At least I don't think so. It's been a while since I've like got a block of Swiss cheese. So.
But yeah, so the point is like every, I think the thing that I want to communicate to our listeners, if you're willing to hear me, I'm grateful for you for listening. I understand that this is annoying for us to talk about at the top. There are definitely people who are at greater risk than we are, who have given up more than we have. All of that is to say,
yeah,
the message that I would like to get across is I think a lot of people have adjusted to the pandemic in a way where they say like, okay, I'm doing stuff outside, masked and distanced. I now believe that that is totally safe.
Yeah.
The truth is there has always been some risk associated with that. The risk was just very, very low because of the numbers. And I think there are a bunch of other activities that people have done that have seemed very safe because of the numbers. The numbers are going up. And your personal calculations for what is safe have to change. We should never talk about it like this is a COVID-safe activity. It's a COVID-safer activity if it's safer. It's all relative. And I want to just urge people to continue to pay attention, if you can, to what is happening and to make adjustments to how you've been doing things, you know? Yeah,
you can just assume, like, if you're in a group of 10 or more people, that at least one person has been exposed, or the likelihood that one person has been exposed has gone up significantly.
Yes.
Statistically. So even if you feel like, well, I haven't gotten it yet, so everything I'm doing must be safe, you've been lucky, and now that luck is kind of dwindling. So
yeah.
Just be aware. Yeah. Don't slacken now.
Yeah. Now is not the time to slacken up. And I think that, you know, we started to slacken up and it wasn't because we got the pandemic under control or like anything like that, or that we learned that it's totally safe to do stuff out, you know.
Myself included, by the way, like I've definitely been doing outdoor hangs a lot more. Like I'm in roller skating groups. I'm, you know, doing all kinds of shit. I think now I'm going to pull back a bit.
It's sadly. Tough.
It's tough.
But
it's
that's smart. And I think that if you are in a position where you can give things up like that, you would be lessening the burden on the people who can't.
Yeah, there's so many people who are forced to work right now. And they don't have a choice not to. And there have been a lot more workplace outbreaks in the last few months. And it's fucking unfair.
And yeah, it's really unfair the way this is affecting people. And it really sucks to not see your family, especially at the holidays.
Yeah, it sucks a lot. I'm glad that my mom like called it off. I felt like our whole family was like playing chicken, and my mom was finally just like, yeah, let's not do this. And I'm like,
that's good.
Thank God.
I am not going home for obviously. And I want to thank everyone who has already made the choice to stay home on Thanksgiving, if that choice has been available to you. And it's not too late to cancel.
Yeah.
You can tell them that your favorite podcast host gave you a lecture about it, and you can blame us. And
top five.
They can email their hate mail to DonaldTrump@whitehouse.gov.
Yes. And I am the vaccine news is very positive. I'm really, really, really optimistic about that. And so that keeps me going.
That makes it easier to give up this one holiday season.
I mean, the rollout of that's going to be a shit show, but it's like, it's coming. The results are fantastic. It's like, that's all good. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, this won't be forever.
I'm horny for vaccines, baby.
So horny.
Oh boy. Anyway, I just needed to get that off my chest because I've just been sort of like
stewing,
driving myself up a wall, just like looking at what people are doing. I mean, did you read that New York Times article?
Which one?
The one by Farhad Manjoo that was like, He was like, I traced my COVID bubble to see what the risks were for going home for Thanksgiving. And he did like his own contact tracing on himself and figured out that like what he was calling his like quote unquote COVID bubble was like hundreds of people.
Oh, that's fun. Like, I like that.
But he, you know, but so he was like, yeah, I've been sending my kids to like a learning pod, but then I'm also sending them to gym class. And like he talked to everybody and figured out what their risks were. And there's like a diagram and you can see like, oh, my God, look at all of the people that this guy is in contact with. That's like so many people. And then the end of the article, he's like, but we're still going to see family because it's worth it.
What? No.
And it's like, what?
Didn't you learn anything?
How did you? You just laid out all of the risks that you clearly have been like taking a lot of them, too, that you just kind of had have normalized to yourself. And the one thing that I will say has been making me feel pretty like more like less alienated is reading the reactions to that piece, which is just people being like, you are making my like the sacrifices that other people have been making. Like you are just being so disrespectful. And like people have been reacting in a way that is like makes me feel like, oh, good. Like I'm not alone here in feeling absolutely baffled by this. And
it's so frustrating.
They ended up editing the article based on the backlash, but they didn't change what his decision was. They were just like, we're going to be outside and masked and distanced. And it's still like, well, but you're still going to travel and you're still going to take on those risks. And I don't know. Sorry, guys. So much COVID talk up top. But
your bubble is not a bubble. This is something I've been trying to like explain to people that you can't just be in like five different bubbles and say you're bubbling up with people. It just doesn't.
Yeah. Unless you are having really explicit conversations with each other about everyone else that they're in contact with and everything else that they're doing, like it's not. I think a good rule of thumb is to just assume that everyone you come in contact with has it.
That's how I've been functioning. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, same.
Everyone's toxic and get away from me. I just I love you, but get the fuck away from me.
Oh, man.
well, I have some good news about the world.
Yes.
Do you want to hear this good news?
Hell yeah.
Lay
it on me.
This is about Tristan da Cunha, the island we love. The world's most remote inhabited island chain.
My absolute favorite place in the world.
Your favorite place that has their own special sweaters that we haven't ordered yet because it seems really impossible. You have to call them on the phone or something. I don't know. But they announced full protections for more than 90% of their waters, which is just like a nice, you know, it gets us one step closer to protecting 30% of the ocean by 2030. Apparently, that's a goal the world has.
I love that. That's so good.
Good for you, Tristan da Cunha. Protect good those waters. I don't really know what that means entirely. I think, I don't know, maybe it means you can't like trawl the ocean for things there.
Or do like mining, like oil mining or things like that.
Yeah.
It looks like that. So it will become one of the world's largest marine sanctuaries. So the animals will be protected and that's really good.
That's great.
Yeah.
Some feel good news.
Yeah. So that's great. I'm still obsessed with this island.
I know. I never won't be.
Yeah.
What else is happening?
What else is happening? I've been doing a lot of gardening as usual, but it's just like the weather's cooled down, and so that's been really nice. I've been making herb butter. I might have talked about that on the last episode. That's been really good.
God, that sounds good.
Yeah. I don't know. What's going on with you? What are you guys going to do for Thanksgiving?
We're going to stay in, and Adam's going to cook a bunch of stuff, and I think I'm going to do a puzzle. And I'm going to continue Costner Watch 2020.
Oh, yeah. It seems like you've been making progress.
I have. I've watched 12 Costner movies since Halloween.
Oh, my gosh.
The Bodyguard's still my favorite.
To be clear, it's been 22 days since Halloween.
It's been almost exactly 3 weeks. So that's
Every other day.
Four a week. Yeah, that's pretty a lot. pretty much a lot. I slowed down a bit with Field of Dreams. That one took me like 3 or 4 days to get through. If I found it preposterous. I also like, the whole time I was just like, are these baseball guys based on real guys or not? I don't know. I'm not going to look it up. And of course they are, but I just, it's just so, it's so much about baseball and like how good it is.
It seems like it really hinges on your interest in baseball.
Yeah. I did think it was like a pretty good movie. Waterworld and Robin Hood are both my least favorite so far. They're both terrible. People have asked me like why I chose such a boring, you know, vanilla kind of actor to binge, and like why wouldn't I spend my time watching something better? I just feel like they don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, like, vanilla is actually a very exotic bean.
Yeah, it can be an exotic bean, and it's just like, this is a really stressful year. Like, I'm trying to relax and escape, you know, the present a little bit. Like, I don't need to marathon like cool movies with like a cool actor. Like, I can't, you know, I don't want that.
Yeah, you this want is, old man,
old balding,
or like
weird,
just like just very not old man, very 1990s man, very like 1990s. You could kind of get away with being that much of a boring white guy, man.
There's this video where you can see him talking to Madonna after one of her shows. And he's like, that was neat. Like, he describes it as neat. And then she's like so affronted. And she's like, wow, no one's ever described it that way before. And then he's like, okay. And he leaves. And then she turns around and goes, like she makes a gagging motion.
Oh my God.
And it's like, he's so uncool in it. And she's such a brat. But then apparently later he like took one of his daughters to her concert. Cause he's like, well, that hurt my feelings, but like my daughter, you know, is a singer. I'm still going to take her to see Madonna if Madonna's playing live. And then Madonna apologized to him on stage.
Oh my gosh.
And I just like, I found the whole thing so sweet. Like, he's so dorky in it. And like, I just,
you love it. You
I loved love it. Dorks. I loved it. I love dorks. I thought it was very charming.
Oh, that's really funny. Hey, do you watch The Crown? Have you been watching The Crown?
No, I've only seen that one episode where she's like horse shopping.
Oh, yeah, you watched that one.
Yeah, you described it, and then my parents like just happened to be watching it once, so I watched it with them.
Okay, well, never mind. I just watched the whole like new season, and it's been interesting because it's like all about Diana. Mm-hmm. I mean, not entirely, but like that's a big part of it.
Oh.
And it really has sort of shifted. Like, I understand there's fictionalized elements to it, but it has really shifted my perception of her, because I think it's like, I think I knew that she was really young when they got married, but actually seeing an actor that age portraying her just reminds me like, oh, she was a kid.
She was so she young.
She was 19 when they got married.
Was she really?
She was 16 years younger than me.
Oh my God. Like, wow.
That is so wild.
That's crazy.
Yeah, she was really like, it's just real. Yeah. And how old was Charles? Like, how old was Prince Charles? I'm looking it up. When he married Diana. Yeah. Prince Charles was 32 when he married Diana. She was 19.
Wow.
And yeah. And it's like,
I remember dating a 32-year-old when I was like 25, and he thought he was too old for me.
Yeah, it was, you know, I mean, if The Crown is to be believed, like it really was. The other thing I didn't realize, I mean, I guess I kind of figured it out in like the last season, but that like he didn't just like cheat on Diana with Camilla all of a sudden. Like, Camilla was like the love of his life.
Yeah, she was present the whole time.
The entire marriage she was a part of. Like, he was cheating on her before he married Diana. Like, he and Camilla like never really stopped being together.
Why
didn't
he just marry her? I mean, I know there's so many reasons why.
There's a bunch of reasons that are just stupid and complicated. But yeah, like the royal family really doesn't know how to make their children happy, it seems like.
No, they do not.
The more I watch The Crown, the more I'm like, good for Harry and Meghan. Get on out of there. This
yeah.
is a dump.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Was there a part where Diana is roller skating through the...
Yes.
I think I saw a screen cap of that and I was like, ooh, that seems fun.
Yeah, I think this might be the best season yet. So if you want to jump in now, I bet you could.
How many seasons have there been?
This is the fourth season. Mm. And I think there are only going to be two more.
It's pretty good. It's a good run for a Netflix show.
Yeah.
As we know, they obviously let things run that long. It's unusual. It must be very popular across many, many taste clusters, as they call them.
Yeah. Have you considered making your show for Netflix more expensive to produce?
I haven't seen The Queen's Gambit yet either. I heard that's delightful.
Oh, yeah. You should watch it.
Isn't your sister in it?
My sister has a big role in it.
That's wild.
Yeah, it's so it's so interesting. It's very good. It's very easy to watch. It's like,
when I heard about it, I was like, that doesn't sound like a real show. You expect me to watch something called The Queen's Gambit? But apparently everyone loves it.
I mean, it's honestly a little surprising that it is as like enjoyable to as many people as it is. But it's a pretty, I feel like, classic sort of classic story of like it feels very like Ender's Game.
Hmm. That sounds good.
In terms of like there's like a very special genius kid who has to overcome odds to prove to everyone they're the biggest genius.
Mm-hmm.
Max Silvestri on Twitter, I feel like, had the best description of it, which was, Queen's Gambit is very good. It's like a Good Will Hunting / Mad Men / Ender's Game combo, but where the female hero humiliates chode after chode.
Oh, that sounds really satisfying.
Right? It's like the clothes are really good, like Mad Men, and it's got that sort of like period weirdness and like mid-century sort of beauty to it. But then there's also the like the gender politics, which are just like very softly satisfying in that way, you know. But yeah, and my sister's really good in it. My sister plays a pretty big role. If you're watching it and you're like, why does that person look familiar? It's because it. A woman who looks like me. yeah.
You do look alike.
Yeah, if you have any time off from Costner Fest.
I don't know. It's pretty involving. I'm starting to falter, but we'll see how many I can get through. It's rough. I mean, I'm also in the middle of watching Twin Peaks for the first time, so.
Oh, I've never watched that.
It's good.
Cue the hate mail.
It definitely,
for your hesitation.
It sure does meander, but I'm enjoying it. I don't think anyone could argue with me on that point.
That's good, I guess.
Yeah, come at me, bros.
Should we do Chunch Chat?
Sure.
It's time for Chunch Chat, our regular segment where we talk about any news in the world of Martha Stewart's pony, Ben Chunch.
Chunch. When the clock strikes noon, we could have a picnic lunch, fine wine, full moon, and we're chatting about chunch and chunch.
There's no new chunch news, but Martha did add 14 turquoise blue parakeets to her collection.
Whoa. And
14, that's a lot to get at once. Like I have a friend who got like one parakeet and then she got another one like a few weeks later. And I was like, whoa, that's a lot. But you know,
it's like, slow down on the parakeets.
Wow.
Bitch.
Slow down. But she's, you know, she's accumulating them quickly because they're fun. They're cool. And the more you have, the better, I guess. And so Martha got fucking 14 at once. She said they acclimated immediately and communicated by song with the red factor canaries in the other cage.
What do you think they're saying to each other?
Blue wins, red suck. Like they're having like a gang war, I think. But they're like,
just boy, boy, crazy boy, get cool boy.
We're both snapping like in that West Side Story. So it's a cage of blue next to a cage of red. I like that there was a comment on this Instagram post. Someone wrote, I bet these parakeets will end up with an enclosure bigger than my apartment. And Martha commented, you are correct.
I understand the underlying, like, you know, criticism behind that comment of like, it's kind of, you know, ridiculous how many resources Martha is able to devote to just animals when there are so many people in so much need. That being said, I do think a bird needs more room than I do.
Yeah, it depends. I mean, yeah, we could really debate like whether birds should even be kept in cages at all.
Yeah.
I will say parakeets like aren't that smart. Maybe I'm thinking of finches. Finches aren't that smart. They're a little bit like goldfish.
How much like bird research do you have to do for Tuca and Birdie?
Not very much.
Yeah. You already know stuff about birds.
I don't know that much. It's not a very scientific or realistic show in any way.
you just happen to have read the BuzzFeed article ranking how smart birds are.
Yes. Was that a real article? I haven't read it, actually.
No, I don't know. But you just seemed like you had some kind of information about finches being smarter than,
oh,
you know.
Yes. Well, that's from my phase where I was really into like pet birds. And I had a few myself. So I kind of dipped in and then dipped back out. Yeah. Whoops, because I don't think they make great pets. But, you know, to each their own.
We had a pet cockatiel when I was a kid. And it was a bad situation, I think. It seemed like she sort of was not thriving because she started laying eggs and being really like upset and guarding her eggs and being like,
I kind of relate to that.
Yeah.
I think I'm too similar to birds to have them in my house. It's like two super like neurotic hormonal creatures next to each other. And we just kind of feed off each other. That energy gets a little
that
too.
Yeah.
That sort of petty energy. Birds are very petty. I feel like they hold grudges.
Yeah. They seem. Yeah. I'm really worried about Alan making permanent enemies with some of the crows in our neighborhood.
Ooh, yeah. Crows will really remember.
They will remember. And he keeps like trying to chase them. And I'm like, Alan, knock it off.
Don't fuck with crows. Don't trust them.
Oh, my gosh. There's a Cooper hawk in our neighborhood.
Ooh.
That I keep seeing. The other day I saw it like sitting on a fence very close to us with just a bunch of squirrels running around like really close by. And I was like, what is about to happen? It was sitting like truly only like 3 feet off the ground. And I was like just watching it, kind of waiting for it to attack one of these squirrels or something. And it was very interesting that they were just not moving or anything. And then a jogger came by and the Cooper hawk flew away. But then I saw it again. I mean, I'm assuming it's the same one today in another yard on the same block. And I like stopped to take a picture of it. And then it started flying right at me and Alan.
Oh, my God.
And then it just picked up elevation and just flew up into the air, but I yelped and like jumped away. I was like,
was it big?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it might be, I can't tell if it's a juvenile or not, but I would say it's like the size of a football.
Wow.
I'm a sports guy.
There was a really big hawk that like ate the face off a squirrel and then just like dumped the body like at the barn and then just sat like in a palm tree, just looking, staring at everyone for hours. It was like so intimidating.
Oh, wow. That bird is so goth.
It's so goth. Really just the right kind of energy for 2020.
Oh, yeah. I wonder if, I wonder what the energy of 2021 is going to be.
Oh, super bad. also bad.
But will it be goth?
It'll be even gothier than
anyone
can handle. I don't know. I think, yeah, things will be bad for a while.
Be bad. All right. Well, that concludes Chunch Chat. We'll be right back with One on Fun. Welcome to One on Fun. This is a segment where we ask each other questions that we do not plan in advance or even while we're saying them.
they just tumble out of our mouths.
Yeah. This segment, by the way, I mean, every so often we get a new listener. This segment, I feel like the origins of this segment was I just wanted to get to know you better. And I also wanted to learn how to get to know people better in general, because I think I'm bad at that.
Oh, interesting.
but I don't think I've retained anything.
I feel like I'm good at like asking people questions to like get them get a conversation going, and then I don't really remember anything.
Yeah. Or, and I don't know if I get to the heart of what I truly want to know about you.
Hmm. About me?
Yeah, but I don't know if I could articulate it.
Well, that makes me feel very mysterious. And I like it. I just figured you've kind of mined my depths to the bottom already, and there really isn't much more.
Lisa, here's a question. If there was one thing about you that you could make people know without saying it, like going into a new conversation or meeting new people, that you could just like, they would just know it, you know, what would it be?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. It's funny because sometimes I wish more people knew that I was shy, you know, mm-hmm. so that it's like I come across as aloof, but I'm very shy. I think because I'm somewhat of a public persona, and maybe people don't know that. But then on the other hand,
people
sometimes
just think you're cool.
Maybe.
And intimidating.
Oh, they're so wrong. But maybe, but then on the other hand, sometimes I want people to know, like, I'm not that shy. I'm not that awkward. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, no matter what people think of you, you're like, you've got it wrong. So I don't know. Yeah. I'm really just amorphous and a chameleon, and we'll just kind of fit whatever.
That's a good answer.
I don't have an actual personality.
Yes, you do.
No, I do. Okay, now I ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a bad one. Okay, Emily, of all the Thanksgiving foods that there are, you have to pick one to kill forever. Nobody can ever eat it again. And you can't ever taste it again. And you have to pick one that is the best one that you have to eat all the time.
Okay. Here's a follow-up question.
God damn it.
Will it be traced back to me that I'm the reason why people can't eat the thing anymore?
Ooh.
Or do I just get to, like, veto it and then it's just gone?
It'll be traced back to you. So you have to think of, like,
I'm going to have to answer for this, huh?
Your personal goals versus, like, what the people want. Because it's like, because you are a vegetarian, so, like, you could nix turkey.
Yeah.
But
here's the thing. And it's in part it would be because I'm a vegetarian, and like if I can reduce the consumption of meat, that's, I guess, should be one of my goals. But also, and it's like one of the things at Thanksgiving that I don't personally eat. But also, I would say for me personally, the most, I might have brought this up on the podcast before, the most foul, like I want to barf just thinking about it, smells of all time is boiling the fucking turkey bones afterward to make broth. And every year at Thanksgiving, I just cannot go into the kitchen because I will yak.
It is the part I look forward to most, is like boiling the bones and then making turkey soup. I think it's better than the actual turkey. But I know
the
smell is foul.
Thing. It's so gross.
It's so foul. You're right.
And apologies if you feel like I am, I don't know, I don't want to be like culturally insensitive or something. Like if there are like people for whom like boiling turkey bones is like a deeply held cultural practice, I don't mean to malign that in any way. I just, I'm super sensitized to it from not eating meat for 20 years. So like, it's just,
I love I love kind of any kind of meat broth. Like it's like my favorite thing. And I think the smell is just horrible. So I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, it's like the boiling lard, and yeah. So I guess I would say turkey, you know what I mean? And I'll deal with the fallout, I guess. I feel like a lot of people would secretly be relieved.
I think so.
I don't think anyone's like, oh, thank God we finally get to eat all this turkey. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's a lot of people who would be happy to be like, oh, well, too bad. We have to eat a better tasting meat today.
Oh, wow. We don't we don't have to buy a 14-pound thing to cook and deal with. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, to cook for like 5 hours, you know?
Ugh, so annoying. I do look forward to eating turkey, but I also think I could be fine without it.
Yeah. And then my favorite, number one, stuffing. All
wow.
day, baby.
Wow. Yeah.
It's the best. It's like so good.
That bready.
It's That was the thing that, you know, we've been talking about what we're going to do for Thanksgiving. And it's like, I'm just going to cook. And it's interesting because, like, you know, like, I asked Peter what he wanted, and he was like, honestly, it's not that important to me that we have, like, a traditional Thanksgiving as much as, like, I like having a good meal. Like, yeah. It doesn't have to be, like, we don't have to have cranberry sauce. For me, he was like, but stuffing is the best. Like, we both agree that, like, we definitely have to have stuffing. But for me, I actually think I want to do a lot of the other Thanksgiving things just because we don't get to be with family on Thanksgiving. And yeah, so it feels same. Like... it's the only way it's going to feel like Thanksgiving is yeah. if we do cranberry sauce and stuff like that. So
yeah, same.
Yeah. But yeah.
Good answer.
Anyway, thank you very much. I feel good about it.
I'm glad you stuck to your principles on the turkey, even though people will murder you for it.
I know. I mean, backup option is pecan pie. Is that a thing that people eat a lot of?
Yeah, sort of.
I just don't like nuts on a pie. I don't like nuts on dessert. I'm just...
That's fine.
I gotta rule it out. I just, like, I'm not a nut person.
You like pumpkin pie better?
I like pumpkin pie better.
It's pretty good.
I like apple pie better, too. That's also, I think, an okay Thanksgiving dessert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to... pecan pie, not my favorite. I don't like how gelatinous the, like, stuff that holds all the nuts together is. I think that... the texture of that can be a little too...
I just don't think that much, like, hard wooden crunch belongs in a dessert. And I also don't like, you know, peanut brittle or things like that are just, like, you're just putting your mouth through a whole workout. I like a little bit of crunch, like a puffed rice and, like, a chocolate bar, you know, that's good.
Yeah.
But big old nuts, get out of here.
I love nuts.
Nuts don't belong on a sundae.
Oh, I love it. I love them.
No way.
So good.
I think I just, like, really don't like nuts unless you're just, like, eating them on their own. But there is a recipe that I've been making a lot lately that's, like, this pasta dish that you top with some, like, finely chopped walnuts mixed with basil and parsley. Mm. And that is really good. It adds,
that's
like,
so
a nice
good.
Little, a nice little crunch to it. So
I love, like, walnuts in, like, a bread, like in, like, a banana bread or, like, a brownie or something.
It just ruins it.
Oh,
ruins
I love it.
Let's, like, we now interrupt this delicious treat for a chunk of wood. Like, get out of here.
I like it. I'm like, ooh, healthy and fatty and complex.
All right. Well,
earthy.
That concludes What on Fun. We'll be right back with Wiki of the Week.
In times of stress or anxiety, it can be hard to remember to take time to focus on yourself. But your joy and pleasure are so important, especially right now. Put your well-being first with Dipsy.
I don't relate to that. I have no problem putting myself first and Me focusing neither. On my own joy and pleasure. But I get that other people have a harder time with that. And I think you and I alike will enjoy Dipsy.
Yeah, we've talked about how we like, you know, things that kind of allow us to escape the current moment and forget about our troubles for a bit.
Yeah. And I think that your own imagination is a very powerful tool. Mm-hmm. And Dipsy is an audio app full of short, sexy stories and wellness sessions that are designed to turn you on and help you get in touch with yourself. And let me tell you, we have been hearing from listeners who have been very happy that we have turned them on to this website. And that makes me really happy.
Yeah. All the stories are relatable and immersive, so you feel like you're right there, and there is something for everyone, whoever and whatever you're into.
The wellness sessions can also help you unlock new confidence or heighten intimacy with your partner.
And this is just like an app that you can download onto your phone, right? And you can just sort of listen to the sessions as if they're podcasts or like meditation sessions or anything else, but they're very sexy.
There's a wide variety of very sexy stories to listen to get you in the mood, to get you in touch with yourself. And for listeners of this show, Dipsy is offering a 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/geniuses.
Yes, a no-risk free trial. That's a 30-day free trial when you go to dipseastories.com/geniuses.
dipsystories.com/geniuses.
Hey, I'm Bria Grant, an e-reader who loves spoilers and chocolate.
And I'm Mallory O'Mara, a print book collector who will murder you if you spoil a book for me.
And we're the hosts of Reading Glasses, a podcast designed to help you read better.
Over the past few years, we've figured out why people read.
Self-improvement.
Escapism.
To distract ourselves from the world burning down.
And why they don't.
Not enough time.
Not knowing what to read.
And being overwhelmed by the number on their TBR list.
And we're here to help you with that. We will help you conquer your TBR pile while probably adding a bunch of books to it.
Reading Glasses.
Every week
on MaximumFun.org.
Welcome to Wiki of the Week. This week's Wikipedia page was sent to us by Nathan Molenda.
Thank you.
It is the Wikipedia page for worm charming.
Worm charming, worm grunting, and worm fiddling.
This was actually sent to us by multiple people, I think.
Oh, I never paid attention until now.
Who sent it to us recently?
Abigail Cohen sent it to us. Nathan Molenda is, that was in April.
Yeah, and also Bend sent it to us.
Cool.
Ben sent it to us 2 days ago. Okay, so let's just say a lot of people have sent us this page.
A whole ton of people like this page, and we're finally doing it.
We're finally doing it. All you worm charming stans get excited.
You worm grunters and your worm fiddlers. That sounds like such a gross euphemism.
Yes.
But these are all methods of attracting earthworms from the ground. The activity is usually performed to collect bait for fishing, but can also take the form of a competitive sport in areas such as East Texas.
Lisa wasn't just riffing names for it. Worm charming, worm grunting, and worm fiddling are all the official names of getting earthworms out of the ground.
As a skill and profession, worm charming is now very rare, with the art being passed through generations to ensure that it survives.
So fascinating. So, like, snake charming is a thing I know from cartoons only.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm assuming that this is named after that, or is it just charming animals of different kinds is just like an accepted name for how to get them to come to you?
I think it is. It's like luring. It's like, charming.
I like it. I like it because it implies just like the value of charm.
It does. And I think it's like, it seems like you're hypnotizing them a little bit.
Yeah. Methods. Most worm charming methods involve vibrating the soil, which encourages the worms to the surface. In 2008, researchers from Vanderbilt University claimed that the worms surface because the vibrations are similar to those produced by digging moles, which prey on earthworms. The same technique is used by many species of bird, which devour the worms as they appear above ground.
So you're not even charming them, you're just shaking them out.
Yeah, there's no sort of like being charismatic or anything.
Like playing a flute well or something.
Yeah.
The activity is known by several different names, and the apparatus and techniques vary significantly. Worm grunting generally refers to the use of a staub, which is a wooden stake that is driven into the ground, and a rooping iron, which is used to rub the staub.
You stick the stick into the ground, and then you rub it with a rope to make that vibrate? Okay.
Yeah, and I think it vibrates the dirt. Worm fiddling also uses a wooden stake, but utilizes a dulled saw, which is dragged along its top.
Wow. Techniques vary from sprinkling turf with water, tea, and beer to music or just twanging with a garden fork.
Whoa.
In some organized competitions, detergents and mechanical diggers have been banned.
Wow.
Yeah.
Worm charming is a behavior also observed in the animal kingdom, especially among birds. The methods used vary. However, tapping earth with feet to generate vibrations is widespread. One common example is a seagull dance. The wood turtle also seems to be adapted for worm charming, as it is known to stamp its feet, a behavior that attracts worms to the surface and allows the turtle to prey on them. I was trying to figure out if it's an actual turtle or a bird named the wood turtle. It's a turtle.
I guess it's a turtle. Okay, yeah. It's an actual turtle. I need to get over my own biases here and just be like, you know what? I guess turtles can be hunters. I just had not considered that.
I could picture a turtle eating a worm. Yeah, the way turtles go for your fingers sometimes, definitely.
Oh yeah, the snap. I think that I guess that's like a good hunting thing, is just to basically pretend to be a rock for a while until something walks by. Soil conditions. Worms are most commonly found in damp or wet conditions that and tend to move away from dry soil. The success of worm charming can often depend on these soil conditions, with charmers choosing damp locations or using water to attract the worms.
As a profession, worms are sold as live bait for fishermen, and many sellers use worm charming techniques to gather their stock. In some locations, professional worm grunters need to obtain a permit in order to ply their trade.
Oh man, I would love to go to that office.
I know.
All the worm charmers applying for their licenses.
Ew.
Do they have to do like an eye test? I just am imagining it like exactly like the DMV.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me that one of the uses is not for like compost. Because like I've bought worms before. They had to be charmed from somewhere, right?
Yeah. Where'd they get them?
Where'd they get them? I guess they just breed them.
Yeah.
Competitive worm charming. In most competitions, the fiddlers with the collector or collectors of the most worms this sentence is written weird, but that's okay. So basically, the fiddlers with the most worms in a set time are declared as the winners. They usually have a zone in which to perform their charming, measuring 3 yards square.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Assuming that each square is equally filled with worms. This could be unfair.
Yeah, how are the zones assigned?
One of the first worm charming events took place in a school fete at Williston County Primary School in Williston, Cheshire. The World Worm Charming Championship started in 1980 and is now an annual event that celebrates the sport. It was organized by then Deputy Headmaster John Bailey, who wrote the original rules for the competition.
The current world record was established on June 29th, 2009, by 10-year-old Sophie Smith of Williston, England, who raised 567 worms during Britain's Worm Charming Championship. World Worm Charming Championship. That is a tongue twister.
How many? 567 worms?
Yeah, that's so many worms.
I clicked the article and it doesn't say how long they have to find these worms. Maybe the next paragraph will say, rules of the British and European Federation of Worm Charmers include a plot no greater than 3 meters by 3 meters, a 5-minute warm-up period, a three-person team of charmer, catcher, and counter, and that all worms must be returned to the ground after the contest, according to the British Association of Worm Length Supporters, or BALS. British Association of Worm Length Supporters.
Citation needed.
But like, how long do they have to get the worms?
Yeah, how long do they have this? Yeah, I'm confused.
Like 567, like how many worms a minute are we talking here?
How long is a worm charming competition? I'm Googling it right now.
Did this little girl cheat?
15 minutes.
15?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a lot of worms.
Yeah, that's a lot of worms for 15 minutes. That's like 200 and almost 200 every 5 minutes.
I bet she cheated. I bet she had worms up her sleeves.
She just walks in like a super wiggly coat.
You know, she's just a little fidgety. She's only 10. Yeah.
This sounds really fun. Devon Worm Charming Festival, also known as the International Festival of Worm Charming. This event takes place in the small village of Blackhaughton, South Devon, during the early May Bank holiday. It has been running since 1984 and is accompanied by a real ale beer festival and other activities.
Ooh, drunk worm charming. That sounds fun. Knock back a few and go dig up some worms.
Yeah.
Canadian Worm Charming Championship and Festival. This was held at Shelburne Fiddle Park in Shelburne, Ontario on June 9th to 2012. That's not a very interesting segment.
No.
Sorry, wiki page.
American Worm Grunting Festival.
There we go.
The town of Sop Choppy, Florida has held an annual Worm Grunting Festival since 2000. The event includes a ball and the crowning of a Wormgruntin king and queen. Sop Choppy is one of the settings and Wormgrunting a plot element in the 2017 novel Clownfish Blues by Tim Dorsey. Wow.
See also snake charming.
Yeah. And I just followed the link to Tim Dorsey's page. Tim Dorsey is an American novelist. He is known for a series starring Surge A. Storms, a mentally disturbed vigilante antihero who rampages across Florida, enforcing his own moral code against a variety of low-life criminals. This book series sounds
He's gotten so many
horrible.
Books. Yeah. There's Hammerhead Ranch Motel, Triggerfish Twist, The Stingray Shuffle, Torpedo Juice, Atomic Lobster. These are great, great.
Gator
great.
A-Go-Go.
And Clownfish Blues, which is one of his later ones.
Yeah.
Naked Came the Florida Man. That's the newest one. I like that. No sunscreen for the dead.
A year. Yeah, he writes a book a year, at least.
Tiger Shrimp Tango, Coconut Cowboy.
Yeah. In 2011, he wrote two books, Electric Barracuda and When Elves Attack.
Was that a holiday special?
I don't know. Maybe.
I'm going to go to his website. Oh, my God.
What?
It's very beachy.
Yes, that makes sense.
It's very beachy looking.
Yeah, I mean, you can guess what kind of shirt this guy's wearing in most of the pictures of him.
Yeah.
Did you guess Tommy Bahama?
You are right. You are correct.
Wow.
His book covers are great, honestly. I really like them. They're very consistent. Very
brightly. The Florida novelist is like a type of guy.
Yeah.
Who's the other one?
Is there another one?
Carl Hyacin writes books about Florida. And then also Dave Barry. These are the three Florida authors that I know.
He's got a real, like, kind of Margaritaville feel to...
Yeah, for sure.
Wow, great.
Well, that concludes Wiki of the Week. It's time now for What Did I Learn?
What did I learn?
Lisa, what did you learn today?
I learned that a 10-year-old girl can dig up 567 worms in 15 minutes.
She charmed them. She didn't dig them up.
That's right. She charmed. I'm sorry. She wiggled. She wiggled and they wriggled and they came out.
If you think about it, they were really working together as a team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She danced, she tangoed with these worms, and she won. What'd you learn?
I learned that... I learned that Lisa wants people to know that she is shy.
I guess I do. I don't really...
I think I knew that already, though.
I am and I'm not at the same time.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's fine.
I think shyness is an element of your personality. It's not 100% of who you are.
It's not very interesting.
Doesn't have to be.
It's fine.
There's a lot about people that is not interesting.
Yes. But it makes up the rich tapestry of who they are.
Yeah. You don't want every thread to be like a neon thread in the tapestry of who you are.
Yeah.
That would just be a garish tapestry that you wouldn't want to look at.
Don't pigeonhole people and don't use a single color of thread. What?
Well, that's our show. You can email us at babygeniusespodcast@gmail.com.
You can send us butt pics and wiki links and whatever other weird ass things you want to send.
Yeah, that sounds great.
We love it all.
Follow us online. I'm at Mr. Emily Heller.
I'm at Lisa Draws.
Thanks to my brother Nate Heller for our theme music.
Thanks to Rob Pera for engineering this.
And goodbye! Yay!
Yeah.
Hey friends, Jesse here, the founder of Maximum Fun, and I have some really great news to share with you. This year has brought a lot of changes for all of us. And one tradition that we were grateful to be able to hold on to is our annual pin sale to benefit charity. This year, through your generosity and love of pins, you helped raise $95,400 for Give Directly. If you're a member and you bought pins, they'll ship in January. In the meantime, your support will provide direct cash relief to families impacted by COVID-19 across the United States. Even in this incredibly tough year, the Max Fun community remains extraordinarily kind. And whether or not you bought pins, you can continue to help by heading to givedirectly.org. And as always, thank you.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.